Well, hey, everybody. It's time again for Pod Sothoth, a Lovecraft book club with me, Todd Beardsley, and my lovely co-host, attorney, and wife, Claire Reynolds. Hi, Claire.
Hey.
So we are here today to talk about The Rats in the Walls, which is by none other than H.P. Lovecraft, as you might expect from this Lovecraft podcast.
Shocking turn of events.
It was first published in 1924 in the March issue of Weird Tales. And
so weird.
So weird. It is not particularly weird, I don't think. But it is straight up by the numbers gothic horror, as far as I can tell.
I was a little interested, and then I saw, oh, wait, this is taking place in England.
Yeah.
This is what I'm here for.
So, the geography. Well, what do you want to talk about? So, about the geography. We can jump right into the thing.
I'm going to jump right into the thing. So, I loved this story.
Yeah.
It has, as I pointed out, one very problematic drawback, that distracting, I would even say, like, I prevented me from enjoying the story more.
Yeah. So,
and each paragraph, my eyes could not help but look ahead, and I was like, oh, God, no.
Yeah, that is problematic. So, of course, we're dancing around, and we're not going to say the name of the cat.
Oh, my God, no.
So, the cat. There is a cat in the story. He has a very unfortunate, quite racist, possibly the most racist name possible. Don't worry, it's named after Lovecraft's actual cat, which is why, when I read it, not that, Claire, you will ever listen to the podcast, but when I read it, I changed the name of the cat to the name of our cat, Mephistopheles. I don't think I ever called him Mephi, which you do. I think I used his full, proper, demonic, princely name of Mephistopheles throughout. And this is become a tradition, I believe, among people who read Lovecraft aloud. So
do they use their own cat name?
I don't know if they use their own cat name, but everybody changes the name of the cat now. Now, printed...
I mean, obviously.
Yeah. Printed versions seem to always keep the cat name, which I don't know why they need to do that. But don't worry, dear listener. I have a little JavaScript snippet.
Nerd alert!
That you can apply to any page that is that contains the text to The Rats in the Walls. I use hplovecraft.com/writings. Go to the show notes. You can see my JavaScript that automatically changes the name of the cat to my cat's name, and you can change it to your cat's name if you like. So it came up. I was really worried, right? So we were at London Lovecraft, the London Lovecraft Festival, back in February of 2023.
Like a year ago. Yep.
Jeez, crow. So we were there, and we saw one Jason Buck, storyteller. And he is, Claire just gave me a face, and now she's doing a pantomime of Jason Buck.
No, he was great.
He was fucking great. Yeah. Like, he was super good. And he is every bit as much of a storyteller as anyone who would describe themselves as a storyteller would or ought to be.
Yes.
He was great. And he, on the bill at London Lovecraft, he read one or two, I think, Aleister Crowley stories, very short.
Yeah.
And then launched into Rats in the Walls. And as soon as he did, I'm like, oh, God, what's he going to do? Is he going to say the name? Like, he's British. So
I have no memory of this.
Oh, I do.
I think I must have been still very nervous
about
our thing. And so I don't remember this at all. What did he say?
So,
I mean, I would have remembered it if he said the N-word, obviously.
Yeah. He didn't, and he didn't make any big deal out of it. He didn't say anything like, hey, I'm changing the name of the cat. Don't worry. Like, kind of would have appreciated it because I was like on edge up until the moment the cat gets introduced when he did it. But his name was Shadow, which I thought was great.
Okay, I do remember that.
And as I was, you know, preparing for this, I did listen to another reading of The Rats in the Walls just to hear to see what they use for the name.
Yeah.
Just to see. And this other dude on the internet, he uses the name Black Tom, which is okay.
No, it's not.
It is.
No, it's not.
You often call cats Toms, male cats.
Okay.
and the cat is black.
Mm-mm. Just trust me on this one. It's not.
Okay.
Okay. It's not.
All right. Well, Mephistopheles is a perfectly acceptable black cat.
Even that still got me down, like, I went down into the rabbit hole of, like, why would we name a black cat anything bad? Like a demon. Maybe it should be like sunshine, happy, awesome face sure. cat. You know, I mean, yeah. But no, you cannot use Black Tom.
No.
Mm-mm. Nope.
It's the Ballad of Black Tom. Yeah. So Black Tom is the character in the Ballad of Black Tom by Victor LaValle. And that is, by the way, you should read it. The Battle of Black Tom. It is a retelling of the horror at Red Hook, but it's from the point of view of one of the servants, basically one of the acolytes, I guess. He turns out to be kind of a badass, but it's pretty good. It's a super fast read, so liked it a lot. Battle of Black Tom. But okay, fine. Don't name your cat Black Tom. Do name your cat Mephistopheles or Shadow. Sure. And yeah. Then definitely don't name him after Lovecraft's cat.
No.
Which is the N-word.
I did read something. I was like, when did this become, I mean, because I was like, maybe it wasn't as problem. I mean.
It was always.
And then I looked it up and I was like, oh yeah, no, it was still very problematic. And yeah. Also, but he was only 9. And so he probably didn't name his cat that. And I'm like, right, but he still called it that in the story.
So he's still cool with it.
Yeah. And then I went down a whole rabbit hole of like all of these British, like a British war hero who named his, I can't remember what it was. It was, he had a dog.
Horse or dog.
Oh, no, okay. It was the dog. And then it was like the dog was part of him being a war hero, like the dog was helpful during the war, and so this is the dog was buried, and then they decided to take the name off of the dog's headstone sometime like in the modern era, and everyone was like, "Ew, that's erasing history," and it's like, no, we're just I feel like, you know what, the dog does not fucking care, right? Yeah. Just we can still talk about all the great things the dog did.
Right.
We just don't have to
just call him by call him by another name.
Whatever, Fido.
Yeah.
Does not matter.
Rover.
Doesn't matter.
So yeah.
I mean, if the dog's name was Hitler,
right?
Would removing the name Hitler from his grave be considered like erasing? Well, yes. You know what?
Maybe.
Never mind. All right. Never mind. I mean, we're coming at you from a time and place where riot on the Capitol is deemed just a...
You would actually think it was a normal tourist visit.
It was
a tourist stroll. It was for selfies. No, it wasn't. It was an insurrection.
Sorry, you're going to want to...
Thanks, Colorado and Maine. That's fine. Yeah. No, are you kidding?
All right.
People know our politics.
Well, I know. No, I'm just saying.
And hey, if you're a Nazi or a racist, please stop listening to our podcast.
Also fuck off.
And fuck right off. There are a couple other places in the text where I changed the reading, specifically the term Negroes. Both instances seemed very appropriate to just change that to slave.
Don't want to say those words.
No, it's fine.
It's fine. Because they're in Virginia. It's pre-Civil War. They were definitely slaves.
Yeah, they weren't house guests.
No. So change those up. And it really, like this story, the story is great. Don't get me wrong. I really like the story. And it's super creepy and spooky and awesome in every way.
Yeah.
It is, this bit is distracting. This is the thing that really kind of pushes me over the edge of like, we should publish a collection of Lovecraft called Woke Lovecraft just to get people mad about it.
Uh-huh. But
all we have to do is like light edits.
Oh yeah.
On like keep the horror at Red
Everything
Hook.
The whole
story is like the horror of immigration and the horror of Red Hook, and it's terrible and awful,
and
all that. But we can probably change like a gypsy here and there, right? To something a little more kind, I guess. Where especially when it doesn't interfere with the story, and that's the thing, right? Because I too went down a rabbit hole of like, okay, well, when can you like when you're dealing with historical texts like this podcast does, is it appropriate to change the text from the author to talk about the story. And what you always run into is Huckleberry Finn.
Oh, wasn't it Sam Hill are you were wearing? I thought I was supposed to be Twain.
I say you are incorrect, sir. I believe we decided I would be Twain.
And,
yes, I was just thinking about that.
And with Huckleberry Finn, you shouldn't change the text because the point of, because Mark Twain was himself anti-racist. He was an abolitionist type. And he uses the word specifically for irony. But in this story, it is not used for irony. Okay.
Don't get me started.
Okay. No. Let's do it.
Changing it would, changing that would not change
if you change
at all. If you make it less offensive to modern day ears.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
You can change the name of the character. You could. I will totally grant that you can change the name of the character to Slave Jim. Right, and it doesn't change anything, right? The story still holds together, or just well, but that's the thing. It's like there are certain instances in Huckleberry Finn where it is meant as irony and is meant to point out the ignorance of the character, and you're supposed to hate the character because he says that.
Of which character?
Of Huckleberry's aunt.
Right.
Yeah. And. No? Are you going to argue with it? I'm happy to argue with you about this.
I'm just saying that there are plenty of ways to point out these things without
using that particular word.
Using that particular word. Like, it is not necessary to it. I get that Mark Twain was not a bad person and was going for a whole different thing. I'm just saying that, like, if I were going to read this to, you know, I don't know. I don't think that it's erasing history or even changing the intent of the author to not use that in modern terms.
I think you're right. First off, Rats on the Walls is not The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
No, it's not. He was not trying to be like...
It's a different level, right?
He's not trying to give a...
he's not saying, oh...
Shine a light on some kind of social
exactly
issue.
Not. I think maybe we agree to disagree. I think that if you're teaching Huckleberry Finn, like, in a public U.S. school, maybe you keep the word so you can talk about why it's important to never, ever, ever use that word.
I'll tell you what I would do. I wouldn't, if I were a teacher, and God knows I'm not a teacher, and...
You are spawned of a teacher, though.
I am spawned of a teacher.
So was I. My mom was a teacher, too.
And I would say, I don't know. I mean, these are, you know, no. I just say no. Because as I feel like, as a white person, possibly one of the dumbest things I can do is at all try to provide any excuse or rationalization for continuing to use that word.
Sure.
Like, it is not necessary to the story of Huckleberry Finn at all. Everyone knows Jim is a slave.
Right.
You know he's a slave.
And you know he's black.
You know he's black. People can still be racist and awful without using that term. That's all I'm saying.
Anyway, let's talk about this dumb horror story.
Okay. But it was a really good horror story.
It is a good horror story.
But we're going to move on from it.
We got to
move on. We addressed it. And
we gotta
now let's talk about the substance of the story.
Right. Cool. So the story of the rats in the walls. I'm totally unprepared to recap the story.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just have a bunch of notes, but I'll do it. It's fine.
Well, I can help.
So the story follows a unnamed narrator. I don't think we ever get his first name.
No, we just get the last name.
But he's either... De La Puelle or Delapore if it's Americanized. And his name is Americanized when the story starts. And he comes into possession of Exham Priory. And how does he do this? Well, let me tell you. So he comes from a long, long line of folks. Initially from England, possibly Ireland, but probably England. It's not actually super clear where he's from because all the place names are fake. His family comes from a village called Anchester, not to be confused with Manchester.
Yeah, he's from Schmanchester.
The story starts at the end. It starts like near the end, the Exham Priory, which is his family estate, is getting exploded.
Lovecraft really, like, am I wrong in thinking that this is a common thing for Lovecraft to do, where the, which takes away from the tension, because everybody
gets plot armor, right? Everyone survives.
He survives. Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty, like, he often gives away the story, like, in the title. We open with, like, hey, this priory is getting blown up. We don't know why. A little bit of background on the priory, and then some background more on this Delaporte dude's ancestry, because of course it's Lovecraft. Reminded me a lot of one of the last stories we read about the fungus in the mm-hmm. house.
This reminded me a lot.
Shunned
of
house.
That.
Shunned
yeah.
house.
Yeah.
So there's elements. There was elements yeah. of Shunned house in here, or maybe elements of this in Shunned house.
I don't know.
But it turns out, so in this dude's family, there was a secret envelope, and it was passed down from generation to generation. And then, oops, Civil War.
I'm picturing Christopher Walken.
5 long years he wore this watch up his ass.
Yeah, from his father, from his grandfather, this envelope, mm-hmm. which has some secret in it. But unfortunately, or fortunately, the envelope is incinerated during a Union attack on their Virginia estate. So this guy's already kind of a winner, right?
Well, that's the thing that cracks me up, though, is that, like, I don't know. There's so, you know, obviously there's so much about Lovecraft where it's all about where you come from.
Lovecraft is real into heredity. Yeah. There's a few stories.
I'm sorry, Todd. It's hereditation.
Hereditination. Shunned House goes into a lot of ancestry. I'm trying to think of any other ones. Dreams in the Witch House, some do. But yeah, so he never gets the envelope. He doesn't know what the deal is. All he knows is that he has some ancestor who came to Virginia from across the Atlantic. Probably, let's just say England.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's in England.
It might be Wales. It might be Ireland.
Oh, I thought it was like maybe right on the border.
It's right on. Yeah. It's in that neighborhood.
It was
right?
Wales-ish.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Wales adjacent.
Yes.
The best clue in the text is he talks about some legend about his family that, you know, is persistent along the Welsh border.
Yeah.
His father nor he ever knew about the hereditary envelope and what it contained. And so he just ended up moving to Massachusetts, became, you know, an industrialist, basically. Made a bunch of money. And then he had a son, and his son Alfred went off to war over there, right? And he went off to war and made a friend named Captain Edward Norris, which is, I'm pronouncing Norris. I've heard either Norris or Norries. It's spelled with a Y, but I think it's pronounced Norris. Delaporte the Younger, Alfred Delaporte, goes off to war. He serves as an airman, and then he comes back from the war, though, wounded from the war, right? And so...
Very badly.
Real messed up. And so the narrator, Delaporte the Elder, is taking care of him for the next 2 years, and then he dies.
And all of that... He takes the kid one paragraph.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, also I had
when
this
you
tragedy.
Get to the end, you're like, oh, that really should have been explored in more depth, perhaps.
I would. I'm with you. Like my note to Lovecraft 100 years later.
We can send him pages.
Like, I mean, build this up a little bit. Like, make us care a little more, because I think that if we go into this, because he kind of launches himself into this Exham Priory restoration because he has nothing left. He's old. He's very old. He is an industrialist. He lost his son to the war. He's got no other family around. And he's like, fuck it. I'm just going to go like reconstruct this castle. And it becomes more gothic for sure.
Yeah.
If he's like, you know, a little more pained about all of this. Mm-hmm. Like, if we get that, and we could get that in like two or three paragraphs, right?
It's more of the, it says, he tells, doesn't show. I mean, you could, and this is so dumb of me to critique. I couldn't you write could this.
We're like 40 episodes in. We're fucking experts. Yeah, okay.
No, but I'm just saying that, like, you know, for its, I don't know. I mean, there were, he could have.
I would have preferred another paragraph about how much he loved his son, yes, and how much it pained him.
Or even if he didn't, it was just like how awful it was. Yeah, this whole experience of caring for him for 2 years while he died was very disturbing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think of the character from Boardwalk Empire, right? With the with his face blown off.
Oh, Richard something.
Yeah, Richard is great that.
Loved him.
It occurred to me, the basis of fiction is that people have some sort of connection with each other. But they don't.
And that's what I want. I want that. Yeah. I want some of that emotional baggage. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Yeah. So the kid comes back from the war, dies, and Delaporte the Elder goes overseas to meet up with this kid's friend, which is great. I love that. Mm-hmm. You know, Captain Norris. And Captain Norris, turns out, his uncle now owns Exham Priory, mm-hmm, and is happy to give it to him at a reasonable price.
Can I even tell you, at this point,
yeah,
I was convinced that Norris was part of the cult. I thought, oh, yeah, he's part of the cult. He's like, yeah, sure, we'll sell it to you at a cheap price. And then you can.
And you've got a bunch of
and
money.
And then you can fix it up. Yeah. And then, well, because everything was like, yeah, Norris is in with this with him. And that's not how it happened.
Turns out,
I thought for sure that's going to be what happened.
So he goes over there, and then he spends another 2 years or so rebuilding and restoring his ancestral estate. That is wonderful. So everything turns out to be great, and he spends the rest of his life in the castle. And thank you for coming to Podsatha. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. So one of the issues that he has is he gets back to his ancestral homeland, and as he's trying to do this, he notices that, like, the villagers are avoiding him.
They all hate him a lot.
Yeah. And then you find, okay, I mean, we're not, they presumably, whoever's listening to us is already, we can talk about spoilers, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But they just listen to the reading of.
Yeah, they just listen to the reading of it. That's what I'm saying. So you find out that the ancestor that went from England, mm-hmm, back over to Virginia, mm-hmm, was actually considered a hero amongst the village.
Yeah, and it's buried a little bit in the text. I didn't notice it until, like, honestly, like, this time I read it.
Yeah.
Where there's a line in there about how, like, yeah, he murdered his whole family, mm-hmm, and the law was, like, cool with that, and yeah, he left with honor, and yeah, everything was fine.
I'm thinking, why didn't he focus on that when he goes back? He goes back, and this guy has maybe unearned arrogance and confidence because he goes back and realizes the villagers are like, oh, you're descended from the guy that saved us all, yeah, from this awful thing. And so he's like, yeah, great. Good guys, come back in. I'm going to take this thing over. Mm-hmm. And then slowly the house starts to, like, mentally eat him alive. And, like, he's not a good guy anymore.
Mm-hmm. Where's that story?
Exactly.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. All I could think about was, like, if Guillermo del Toro had done this, yeah, that's what would have.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that. Now, these villagers, you know, they're villagers.
They still just hate them.
And they just, yeah, they're superstitious, yeah, and hateful.
As are all of these, yeah, because they're just,
because it's a Lovecraft village. And then we get more stories about, like, how evil and awful this family is. Up to and including, like, kidnapping various local people and...
But no specifics, right? It's just...
Not real. There's one kind of stretch where a whole bunch of people go missing, like in the distant past, like in the 15th century or something. Yeah. And there was an interesting part in here, which I liked a lot, actually, where the lineage was descended more by character than by hereditary, which I liked a lot because it reminded me very much of a video game I like to play called Crusader Kings 3. And where in Crusader Kings 3, if you haven't played it, it's pretty awesome. It's a Paradox game. And you can have your family be involved in a witch cult. And you end up, like, you have to, like, recruit your own family members into it. And it's very close to only some of your family are in it. Yeah. And that's definitely a thing that you have to like, manage. It's like, okay, well, how am I going to, like, cede all my land when I die to one of the other witches that's in my family?
Right, yeah, that's what I was thinking about this. Is like, okay, so very say Crusader Kings. You're, you know, a matriarch or patriarch, and you have three children. Not one of them is going to be, you're like, no, they do not have what it takes to be a part of this cult.
Yeah. Imagine what that might be like. Let's both of us imagine.
I'm not part of a cult. I don't know.
Okay. Oh, well. All right.
Yeah. Maybe, did my parents arrange this marriage? No. Yeah. And then you would have to seek out total assholes for your kids to marry.
People who are comfortable with like murder and sacrifice
and cannibalism.
And cannibalism. Yeah. There is, let me take a moment here because I do have some notes on a couple of these names here. These characters in Delapore's past are compared to Marquis de Sade.
Oh yeah.
Who is probably the more familiar name.
Yeah.
Marquis de Sade. If you're not familiar, dear listener, Marquis de Sade is where we get the term sadism, or taking sexual pleasure from harming and torturing others. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. If that's your thing, great. And if you have like
a consenting
adult partner, also great. So sadism is awesome if you're into that.
It is.
But it's where we get the term sadism, right? Is from the Marquis de Sade. Marquis de Sade and God damn it, it's a French.
Gilles de Rees. Yeah,
Gilles de Rees is a name unfamiliar to me. I don't know if you knew about this name because of your true crimeness.
Only knew about it because last podcast on the left did a whole three-parter on him, I believe.
What's his deal?
Oh, he was a fucking psycho murderer. I mean, he was basically like, I mean, we don't even know.
15th century.
Yeah.
Hung out with Joan of Arc.
Yes. Yeah.
Murdered 120 children.
Yeah. Or so they say. Yeah. No, he probably was. I mean, he probably did some of that.
Okay. And this is a very, you know, Aristotle, Socrates, morons kind of line here. Right. where it's like, oh, no. The Delapores, they are titans.
Yes.
In the field of cruelty.
Yeah.
Much, much better than Gilles de Rais or Marquis de Sade. So I like that a lot. And then let's skip ahead. Okay. So yeah. It's a whole lot about the ancient past, right?
A lot.
It kind of goes for a while. Okay. So anyway, all the lore happens. And then the house is completed.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1923. It's the summer of 1923. This is where we first meet Mephistopheles the cat. Mm-hmm. And
7 years old.
He's 7 years old. He's, you know, and especially in the 20s, an older cat. A cat that has had a transatlantic journey.
Yeah. Holy shit. Yeah.
You know,
cat's been places.
So all the other, he's got a bunch of other cats. The other cats he acquired from Norris somehow.
Again, I was
how
like,
many cats does Norris have?
Norris is absolutely in on this. He's providing cats. He's providing everything that he could need. He's providing information, like could be false information. He's like, yes. He was like, Norris is one of my most enthusiastic supporters. I'm like, yeah, that's because
Norris is totally on board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I like the read that Norris is a master manipulator. And you know, and it could be like, so when you're running a cult, you often have, not that I would know, but you would often have like, you have your external, you have your exterior cult, right? You have an onion kind of organization. You have your exterior cult of the satellites, right? Of the folks that you want involved in your cult, but maybe not like in the cult, right? But on the inner circle, that's where all like the real fucked up shit happens. And so it's entirely possible, and not disproven from the text, that Norris is in that satellite cult of the Delapores, you know? And maybe that's it. Maybe he is. Like, he's trying to, like, get this up because, like, he doesn't know the real reason. He doesn't know the full story of the Delapore problem.
Right. I think I'm reading, like, once I found out.
No, I like it.
Once I saw the, yeah, no, that would make it better.
It would make it better, and it makes Norris part villain, yeah, part victim.
Yeah.
At the end, right?
Yeah.
So,
but it wasn't. Once I got to the end, I was like, oh, okay, no. Norris was just a hapless.
He would have never signed up, you know, yeah, for his fate, obviously. No. But yeah, he could be a pawn. He could be, so like, very,
if you were going to
write very Renfield-esque,
the novelization,
right,
of this.
And by the way, there's plenty of Dracula in this. A, oh, yeah, the house in Virginia is called Carfax. Obvious nod to Bram Stoker. The villagers are all very Dracula villagers. Norris could be a Renfield kind of character. I can see it.
Are there any books or movies that explore the life of a Dracula villager?
No.
From his not that his I know her of perspective.
Yeah.
Just like their normal work a day, like,
yeah. Of being a superstitious, yeah,
working
Romanian.
For that, working for that man on the hill, you know, gotta.
All right. Anyway, we got to get to the story.
Stay on target.
Yeah.
So,
the cats. All right, he's in there. The cats are like, oh, yeah, constantly getting restless.
The cats are getting restless, and he, from go, can also like sense something weird is happening.
Right.
So like he's got these tapestries called arras in the text, but they're really just like long floor to ceiling tapestries. And the tapestries, he thinks they're moving a little bit, and the cat is going bananas. And he pulled the cat, like, what a fucking cat does. I have a cat.
Oh, yeah.
I've had cats my whole life. This fucking cat, I swear to God.
This is the only cat I've ever had. So to me, this is what cats are like.
Yes. This cat, the cat in the story, tears down this tapestry.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a big boy. Like, he gets on the tapestry and his weight pulls it down.
Absolutely our cat.
Yeah. And so pulls it down, looking around in it, can't find anything. And Delapore is like, there's definitely something here. And then the next morning, it turns out one of the cooks also saw some weird behavior from another one of the cats. And he's like, huh, there's mice or rats or something. That's weird. And he calls his buddy Norris. He's like, hey, dude, are there like fucking mice in my fucking ancestral home? Because that's fucked up and we need to fix this. And Norris is like, oh, maybe, I guess. Here's some rat traps and we'll look around for them. All right. And he has a weird dream. Anyway, the next night. Next night.
The dream?
We can talk about the dream on the second pass, right? Okay. Because it's more of the dream.
Right.
And
if you have a dream, if you have a nightmare once, it's just a nightmare. If you have it recurring.
If you have the exact same dream.
It starts to mean something.
Right. And so he has this dream of a demon swineherd. In a twilight grotto, and it's weird fungus babies that it's swine herding, and it's a whole thing. They're white, they're fungal. I'm thinking of the adipose from Doctor Who.
Yes.
The adipose has been witnessed.
Yes, you know, I was just thinking about those yesterday because when I was taking down the Christmas ornaments, we have a little tiny adipose ornament.
Oh, that's nice.
And it was hanging right next to a one of the ballerinas from the Nutcracker, uh-huh, and then also an armadillo.
Okay.
So I was like, you know what? This is a well-rounded Christmas tree.
Right. Uh-huh. So his little gross little adipose monsters, fungus monsters. And he has this whole dream, right? And he's like, man, that's really gross. And it's a swine. And the whole thing strikes me as very, it's very Greek, you know, like, yeah, with the swineherd and the beard and everything. Like, it's very, yeah, like Greek mythology.
Right.
And then the cat goes bananas again, and even more so. And he wakes up because the cat wakes him up, and he's like, oh, man.
What's that like? I don't understand.
Oh, my God, this fucking God, I swear to God. We have to say, like, I try, like, every 4 or 5 months, I give the cat another chance to stay inside at night. And
he'll do it for a couple nights.
He'll do it every once in a while.
Himself. Can't help himself.
No, and then he has to come in and, like, sit on somebody's face and claw at the carpet at 4 a.m. to go out. Anyway, I think he's yelling now.
Probably.
Maybe we can hear him. I don't know. And, yeah, he's a real jerk.
He's like, the cat's the hero of the story.
That's not the cat's voice.
The cat's the hero of the story.
That's the cat's voice. Yeah.
Oh God, you guys, why haven't you figured this out
yet? I have never had, like, I've had cats almost my entire life. Every one of my cats has been an indoor cat because I'm a, you know, sensible person. This cat refuses. That just absolutely refuses to be an inside
cat.
But
it's not like he's an adventurous. I mean, he literally just goes front yard, backyard, every once in a while across the street.
Yeah.
And then back, right back.
And it's a miracle he's lived this long.
Yeah.
Or a curse. One or the other. Anyway. So the cat wakes him up, obviously, but loads of rats, right? Like, it's obvious now. There are rats. There are rats in the walls. It's the name of the story. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, can happen.
It's like, oh, dang, there's totally rats in the walls. And then he talks to all the servants again, and he talks to his friend, and they're like, what are you talking about?
These are solid stone walls, bro.
Yeah, yeah. There's no rats in the walls. It's ridiculous. This is built, like, in Roman times. It's fine. Later on, he thinks, oh, well, maybe, like, you know, water over 17 centuries might have, like, done some, you know, tunneling in there. Maybe. I don't know. But this is the thing, right? Like, what's your call on these rats? Are these rats real, physical, not natural rats, for sure, but are they physical rats or are they spectral rats?
They're imagined in his mind rats.
But the cats also see them.
Right. Also.
So they share a hallucination? That's the thing, right? Like, and this never occurred to me either. Like, last time I read this story many, many years ago, I always thought the rats were real.
No, the rats are definitely not real.
Okay.
Because nobody else except for the cats
saw them. So Delapore sees them. The cats definitely see them. And because the cats lose their shit through the rest of the story.
And the rats haven't been there the whole time they were building this or anything. It's not like the rats just...
So they're ghost rats only a Delapore can see, and also cats can see them because cats can see ghosts.
Sure.
How about that?
Okay.
All right. I think that...
Why not?
Now, come on.
No. I can't think of a better explanation. I mean, the whole thing... I thought, frankly, the whole thing could have done without the rats. The rats are the least important part of
the
story.
It's in the title.
I know it's in the title, but, like, I mean, perhaps I missed something, but,
so,
like,
it should just be called The Walls.
It could be called The Bones in the Basement or something.
The Bones in the Basement is pretty good. All right, so the rats go bananas again, and he's like, hey,
I guess the rats are what lure him down there.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's like... The rats are like, no, we're going down, going down.
The cats could have just done that. The cats could have been pawing at the door, and he was like, what's down there?
I'm kind of with you at this point that the rats are kind of a needless MacGuffin in The Rats in the Walls. You heard it here first, folks. could do with fewer rats, complains Todd Beardsley of Pots Off. And Claire Reynolds, of course, because she brought it up. So he has the dream again. He tells Norris. Norris is like, yeah, dude, you probably have ghost rats. And like, Norris was like on board again, underlining the culty bit of him. It's like, no, you should follow these ghost rats that nobody can see, but I believe you because I'm your pal and I knew your son and all that. And so then they're like, okay, how about this? Let's go into London. We're going to get some fucking experts and we're going to deal with this.
And we're going to have a recruitment montage.
Right. We're going to have a whole recruitment montage. Unlike Rebel Moon, where recruitment montage is the movie.
The whole movie.
But in this, it's just a couple paragraphs at most.
Which is what it should be.
So they get Sir Walter, what's his name, and a bunch of other people, one of whom is a psychic investigator, which I like a lot.
Yeah.
He's the mystic class. And so they get a seeker, a mystic, a guardian, mm-hmm. and then a couple other guys. And they're like, cool, let's do this. And so they go down. Oh, that's right. And Norris and Delapore go down to the sub-basement. They find the altar. It's got some weird brown stains. I wonder what those could be. Oh. And then they couldn't move the altar, even though they found...
Because they failed their strength check.
Failed the strength check, but they did find the clue.
Right.
of the breeze coming from under it, right?
Yeah.
And so then they go to London, they get all the guys, and they come down. Uh-huh. And then Sir Walter, you know, passes his investigation check and figures out how to lean this altar back because there's like a hidden counterweight, mm-hmm. which I liked a lot. Like,
yes, I like that too.
Someone had, somebody ancient architecture here had built this in such a way very similar to an Indiana Jones adventure.
Yeah, Indiana Jones or Lara Croft. National Treasure, which obviously is a take from Indiana Jones, which you haven't seen National Treasure?
I have never seen National Treasure.
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
In my entire human life.
You would enjoy it. Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Anyway.
What do you mean by that, Todd?
Nothing. I don't mean it. I mean my life. My earthling life. So they tilt back the altar and bum ba ba ba. It's another staircase.
Yeah.
But it's a staircase littered with bones. Mm-hmm. And some of the bones are like proto people. They're not, and also older than Piltdown Man. Second mention of Piltdown Man in Lovecraft. I'll have you know. We first encountered Piltdown Man back in Dagon. Go listen to that episode for a much longer discussion of Piltdown Man. But Piltdown Man was a hoax and was contrived to try to put Europeans, you know, at some interesting point in evolution. It's kind of racist. Anyway, so go Lovecraft. You got it. And so there's a whole bunch of bones spanning human evolution. Mm-hmm. This thing has been going on since prehistory.
I'm sorry, but like they're just glancing at the, I mean, obviously.
There's like two archaeologists here. One dude is actually checking the bones.
Number one thing is like, nobody move. This is how you archaeology.
It's the 20s. It's like, Indiana Jones archaeology.
You're absolutely right. You're right. But I was just like, wait a minute. How are
it's
you?
It's the confidence of white men.
Like down. To, yeah, you're right. They're just like, oh, that's what this is. It's entire generations of humans and their evolution.
If this had taken place in the late 20th to early 21st century, obviously, you are definitely stopping and you're calling the National Geographic Society. You're putting a cordon around everything. Yeah. You're not touching nothing. And nobody gets eaten.
Right. Yeah.
This is the folly of amateur archaeology.
People constantly getting eaten.
As we saw in The Nameless City. Same thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
The Mummy.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, they get eaten by beetles.
So they go down. They look at all these bones. It's crazy. All the bones are, by the way, gnawed by rats and other things. And then they get to dun-dun-dun-dun, the Twilight Grotto of Dream.
It sounds so nice.
It does. Yeah. And it's natural light. It's not like it's not like some ephemeral light or...
Yeah.
Bioluminescence or anything like that. It's natural light coming from cracks in the cave. Mm-hmm. And it's sounds nice. But it's freaking enormous, right? It's super huge and big enough to contain a low-domed Roman ruin, a sprawling Saxon pile, and an early English edifice of wood.
Uh-huh.
So there's like all these little towns in this enormous underground grotto, which I love. I love that.
I thought that was
it's
good too. I
kind
it.
Of hollow earthy, but okay.
Yeah.
And
right.
And so the anthropologist is looking around at skulls, like totally missing the point here.
Oh my god. Yeah, he's like, "What?"
and then things kind of start going real south. They find a bunch of pits with remains in them. Everything's gnawed by rats. And they kind of piece it together that, like, so there was some society, there was some culture down here forever until the 17th century when, for whatever reason, they ran out of food and then the rats went completely crazy. They ate everything and then they poured out of the priory and ravaged the countryside and ate sheep and cats and dogs and a couple people.
But the rats are a thing. Yeah, but I don't understand why. So
it's like the rats can travel between the two worlds, right? The underworld and our world.
Right. But the story is that his family was keeping.
They were managing it. They were managing this entrance.
They had farms of people down there so they could eat them.
They had farms for the tough vegetable or whatever they called them.
The rough
vegetables that fed the quadrupeds, whatever the livestock is down there.
But someone was eating them, presumably his family members.
And so you had the quadrupeds that were getting eaten by the vegetables. And then
with the vegetables were eating the
let me back up. You have the quadrupeds.
Wait, that just got a lot more interesting.
So you have the vegetables that are grown on the surface.
Yes.
By family Delapore and Baron Exeter and all that, right? And those vegetables go down under to feed the mystery quadrupeds.
Okay.
And then the people down there eat the quadrupeds.
Okay.
And then every once in a while, I guess there's cannibalism. I don't know. Like...
I guess I thought that the deal was his family for centuries had been, I guess it would have to be more than centuries because if you're talking
about millennia,
had been keeping farms of people down there to eat them for.
Well, the site has been active since like Stonehenge times, right? The Druids and the Celts and all those ancient people.
Yeah.
Had been managing the site. His family doesn't show up until the 1400s.
Okay.
And that's the point because it's in the story where before the 1400s, there's no mention of the Delapores of being evil. They become evil when they get this barony.
But what are they doing?
I don't know, being evil. There's Magna Martyr, there's a bunch of culty shit going on, right?
Yeah.
And there's some goddess involved. Sibylle.
They're just part of a cult
They're part of a cult that manages this portal to the underworld.
Okay.
That's it.
That's the underworld. So it wasn't like
I don't think it's like the Hadean underworld of Greek mythology. But it is an underworld.
Okay, so I'm on the Wikipedia, which, as we all know, is the end-all be-all. It says, Delapore learns that his family maintained an underground city for centuries where they raised generations of human cattle. Some regressed to a quadrupedal state
to
supply their taste for human flesh. There's no site for this, though. Just because Wikipedia says it doesn't mean it's true.
Well, that's one interpretation. I think they were just minding their own business.
But what were they? Who was for what? Why were they keeping these people?
It doesn't matter.
Who was eating them? Okay, you're right.
It doesn't matter. There was an underground culture that the Delapores were keeping fed with rough vegetables. That's all we need to know.
What is a rough vegetable? Like cabbage, turnips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mostly cabbage. Turnips and cabbage.
Cabbages. They asked for iceberg lettuce, but they got cabbage.
I cannot convince the shoppers. And I love HEB.
Oh my God, yeah.
You know, like here in Texas, we have a kind of cult relationship with our local grocery store called HEB. And that's all it's called. It's not short for anything.
It is.
It's
short for Howard E. Butts.
Yeah, but we don't.
What's his name?
We don't expand it.
Right. It's just called HEB. Yeah.
But just the store is called HEB. Like it's KFC. It's no longer expanded to Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yep. It's just HEB. And anyway, we have this culty relationship with them because they're a better civic authority than often the Texas government.
Right.
But boy, oh boy, like we do the curbside shopping and they do not know the difference between cabbage and iceberg lettuce. I'll probably cut that whole part out, but
probably because we don't want them to.
I don't want Big Grocery to come down.
Right,
on me.
And we're quite sure that everybody in our neighborhood HEB is listening to this. We don't want.
I put stickers nearby the HEB, like a lot of them.
Yeah.
So they probably know. Moral of the story is.
Yes. Go on.
The Delapores have been maintaining this portal to the underworld for hundreds of years, and now it's been reopened. But while they're down there, it's just so fucking batshit crazy that everybody goes insane. Most notably, Delapore himself,
right.
Where he himself rather instantaneously regresses to a... I'll wait till you're done. I think Claire has regressed to a point of cannibalism. She's eating during the podcast.
Bread is really good. All right.
Delapore himself turns, and it turns out he feasts on Norris himself, flabby motherfucker.
Uh-huh. Oh, God. I know. I was like, what? Wait, what?
Yep. And he gets, hours later, he gets recovered, and now he's in a sanitarium, presumably.
Yeah. But that was the thing. It was like, during the feasting, he says something, so he loses his mind, and he's like...
He does.
I don't know if I skipped ahead on what you're talking about. No, and he says... We're right there. He's like, something about, like, why did you live, but not my son?
Right.
That kind of a thing.
See, and that's the thing. It's like, it's a callback to an emotional setup that never got set up.
Right, exactly. You know?
And I feel like there's probably an edit of this somewhere, like maybe an earlier draft or something where it had more of that.
Yeah.
But it's like, let's just get to the cannibalism.
I mean, I guess if you got to put it in a magazine, it can't be
still, this is not that long, especially for Weird Tales. And yeah, like the line of "the war ate my boy" is like, it really hit. Like, and when I was
like,
reading
wait,
it
what?
Here. Yeah.
I'm like, wait, this is the first time you've mentioned that this would even bother you.
Yeah. But when I was reading through this, and apologies, listener, because I get a little high on the volume during this part. But yeah, when I was reading this, I was like, I literally got chills, and it was like, it was very good. Like, it was very emotional for me. So I really liked it a lot. And then calling out to Magna Mater and all that stuff, right? Yeah. It's like, he just fully embraced his ancestral connection to this place.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is he ate.
And he ate Norris.
He ate Norris. So his people were the eaters. I mean,
yes.
Because otherwise, why would he do that?
There's cannibalism all around, right? Like, that's the whole thing. And so, and it's very, you know, it makes the narrator into the villain, you know, because of, and it's like kind of a hubris sort of story.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, the story often gets compared to Fall of the House of Usher, which I don't see. Like, I get, you know, Poe and... Lovecraft's clearly aware of Poe, and he talks, he kind of models things after Poe every once in a while. And I can see like how this starts as like, oh, well, what if it was Fall of House of Usher, except, you know, he turns into a cannibal at the end. and I like that as like a jumping off point. I don't see a ton of connection between this and the Fall of the House of Usher. You know, I've just reading around on the internet, the name Delapore, like, it has the string Poe in it, P-O-E-R.
Oh, you know? I hadn't thought about that.
So maybe that's a thing. I don't know. Anyway, he eats Norris because Norris is Renfield, I'm now convinced through this conversation. And
Norris is like, no, this isn't how it's supposed to go.
Right. And then they blow up Exum Priory, and they're just destroying the whole thing. Now, it's unclear who orders this, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because he's not
it's the mayor of the town.
Yeah, I guess the mayor of Anchester.
Of Anchester.
And because it's clearly not him.
I love their soccer team, Anchester United.
Yeah, Anchester.
Anchester United.
United. Yeah, real big fan. And when like he asks about Norris, and they accuse him of this hideous thing, da 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 da. So it's cannibalism, turns out. Anyway, in the end, it's always cannibalism.
Yep.
So that is the recap of the story. I feel like we've been doing this for a long time.
I know.
It's okay. I've already cut 20 minutes out. I have a couple notes.
Yes.
Let me take a break.
Okay.
And let me make a funny noise in the podcast. First off, I wanted to kick off a Lovecraft travel agency and find out where Exham Priory is, but it's entirely fictional. It is somewhere probably near the Welsh border with England.
It's entirely fictional.
But there are not enough clues in the text to pin it down to an actual place. And I'll tell you why. The geography is very confused. It is a mishmash of a made-up England.
Yeah.
So Lovecraft never went to England. And this is not particularly surprising.
Okay.
So he kind of mishmashed a bunch of stuff together. He talks specifically about the Third Augustan Legion. Now, I do spend some time thinking about the Roman Empire. And I will tell you right now, the Third Augustan Legion never went to England. The Third Augustan Legion was camped in North Africa. So never went there. There's no possible way the Third Augustan Legion went there. Oh. Some other Roman legion surely was there. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know enough about the Roman legion to tell you exactly which one was there. But, you know, England was conquered by the Romans. And they, in fact, founded the city of London.
He did like his diss on the Saxons.
Yeah, the Saxons suck ass.
He was like, well,
more like the Saxons. Yes. And now, because the whole region was under Roman influence, Cybele worship would have definitely been going on in anywhere in England at the time. Cybele was translated from Asia Minor, which is where your Phrygian priest would have come from as well. So there's like a bunch of Asia Minor stuff going on. Cybele, though, was picked up by the Romans and translated into Magna Mater, who is this earth goddess type person, later picked up by much later Druidic, Celtic, you know, kind of really like modern Wicca people, right, would recognize this this goddess. So that all checks out, but everything else is either in Turkey or in North Africa. So none of that makes any sense. My notes are about Anchester is not a real place.
He didn't have Wikipedia to check.
He didn't have Wikipedia. I think that, one bit of trivia. When he's on the train back from London, he's looking forward to the thing. He mentions the unexpected death of the American president. Across the ocean, and that would have been Warren G. Harding.
Oh, yeah.
So,
how did he die?
I will tell you.
Okay. Why, thank you, Todd.
Cliff, explanation, please.
Now, how do you know he has one?
$5 says he does, 10 says it's a doozy.
So, Warren G. Harding, President of the United States, he died on August 2nd, 1923. And as we know from the text, the action of the story takes place on August 7th. So this was just a few days before. Harding died. At the time, it was mysterious circumstances. He was in San Francisco in a hotel room, and he probably died of a heart attack, almost certainly died of a heart attack. But doctors at the time did not know what a heart attack looked like.
Yeah.
And he also had pneumonia. And so it was probably a heart attack brought on by complications from pneumonia.
Okay.
Or was it?
It probably was.
It probably was. But, like, I can definitely see, hey, Call of Cthulhu players out there.
Oh, yeah.
Build a story around the death of Harding in San Francisco. Oh, because San Francisco in 1923 is a pretty fun place to be.
Yeah.
And, oh, yes. Also, there's a blooper in this.
A blooper?
A bloop. So he mentions the god Attis, A-T-Y-S, and that reminds him again of the Sibylian cult. However, Attis is sometimes confused with Attis with an I. Attis with a Y was the son of Croesus, who is a Minoan king,
okay,
and a human person, not a god.
Okay.
Whereas Attis with a Y,
yeah,
was a god in Asia Minor who is, oh, connected with the Sibyllian cult. Oh. There would be no way anyone would, okay, write Attis Y on, anyway. So,
okay,
it's a big blooper.
Oh, interesting.
Big goof by Lovecraft. They wouldn't have written that. That's right. And I think that's all I have.
All right.
Phrygians are great. Again, they're from Turkey. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's all I got. That's all my notes. We did it all.
Yeah. This was a good one. I liked it.
Yeah. If you can just like pre-edit.
Yeah.
The cat's name before you read it.
Again, you know, I was.
I will make it easy for you. I will give you the JavaScript. You just run it in either as a bookmarklet, if your browser supports that, or in developer tools, which all browsers support. You can just run this little thing, and it just runs through and corrects the words. Or just get the text, put it in your favorite word processor, and search and replace the offending name with the name of your favorite cat, as long as it's black. It has to be a black cat. It's important for the story. And I think that's it. Jeez, I didn't even look at my email. Do you want to talk about Arkham Horror?
I feel like we've gone a long time on this anyway.
I'm sorry. Never mind.
That's it. That's Rats on the Walls. This one is a longer podcast. And we'll talk to you later. Hey, if you like this podcast, please feel free to leave a positive review on your podcast app of choice. If your podcast app of choice is Castro, I'm sorry, but I think Castro is dead. Yeah, I know. It's a bummer. That was mine. I really like Castro, but boy, they just like they can't keep the servers running, and it's a bummer. So I'm looking for a new podcast app for myself. I'm back on Apple Podcasts, which is kind of garbage.
It's absolutely garbage.
I hear Pocket Cast is pretty good. Maybe I'll try that one. But anyway, if you like it, say so on your podcast app, and that would be super swell and handy for ranking purposes. You can reach out to us at hideous@podsothoth.club. Also on Mastodon, we are at podsothoth@defcon.social. And if you like this podcast, have I got a podcast for you? Claire has her own podcast.
This is so not true.
She has her own podcast, and it's called Hot for Teacher.
Todd still does all the work.
Hot for Teacher, a Greatest American Hero Watch Party. So if you like 80s Gen X garbage, that's a good podcast for you.
How dare you? It is not garbage. That show holds up.
The show's pretty great.
Yeah.
Also Lovecraftian.
It's like Lovecraftian, but
comedy.
Cheerful.
Yeah.
Cheerful,
yeah,
Lovecraftian. Cheerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Where the heroes aren't cannibals.
Right.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this episode. And I am going to stop recording now. So thank you very much. Thank you, Claire, for discussing Rats on the Walls with me.
Thank you for inviting me, Todd.
All right. And not even one mention of the wolves on the walls. No, goodbye.
Yeah. Oh, I love you.